Okay. So you were talking about the contract farming.
Yeah.
Is that because it's uneconomic to run a small farm?
Well, it seems, yes, it seems to have been the direction that we've gone in. Not accidentally. initially, George came to me in year 2000 and said that he wasn't going to buy another combine. Would we cut his corn for him? That went from combines to other machinery as well. So we ended up doing all of George's at Lower Farm, which was 200 acres. And that made us quite a tidy little unit. We were doing about 700 or 800 acres then. We had just got rid of the dairy cows and the pigs. The dairy cows went primarily really because we were milking cows right on top of the River Mearn, the source of the River Mearn, and anything went even slightly wrong, the buck would undoubtedly stop with us. So, you know, we weren't really big enough. We had to expand in such a way in the dairy that we'd have had a huge investment, which we weren't prepared to do. When, you know, if the Rivers Authority decided they didn't want us there, they could turn around and pull the plug. So we decided that it wasn't worth doing, and we got out of dairy. So we were falling away from livestock. George was falling away from arable, so that it became, you know, common sense that we come together.
When did the split happen? When did you stop doing dairy? And when did
about 2000. About the turn of the century. That sounds dramatic, doesn't it?
Millennium.
Yeah. About the turn of the century.
So how many acres in all, including the contract, do you farm?
3,000.
3,000. Right. And how many people do you employ?
Two.
That's including...
No, that's two over and above Matt and I.
Right, so it's four of you.
Four of us are farming that all together.
Do you have any idea how many people would have been employed a century ago doing that?
Well, I can tell you how many people were employed a century ago. Yeah, it would have been, on that acreage, it would have been 50, 60. Because if we go back to when we had cows, let's say the mid-90s, we were still up to about seven or eight men then. And I had a medium-sized herd of pigs as well. And there was myself and a girl doing that. There was two people involved in the dairying, plus another three ancillary. Yeah, there was a good seven or eight of us on the farm in the mid-90s. That changed dramatically with the departure of the cows. And I have to say, the difference in farming.
So what are the differences in farming just in that period?
Technology is scary. Absolutely. Well, the irony, Michael, of us being sat here now, I have just left the farm with somebody from our local dealership coming down to go through yet another tractor, and it's wizardry that it can do, and it's just quite scary, to be quite honest with you.
We've done an interview with Tony Fry, who said there was no more work left on farms for a blacksmith because they're all done under a guarantee by the manufacturer.
Well, you can't keep the stuff. You can't. The more electronics they put on this machinery, the less you can fix it yourself. In order to buy this machine that we've got now, I've sold two tractors. They have gone, they will go to Eastern European countries, or what were, you know, the old Soviet bloc countries, because they're the last of the John Deere's that a farmer can put a spanner on. And they're about 10 or 15 years old, and they're the last tractors that they reckon and they like them over there, because if they go wrong, they can turn around and fix them, whereas, you know, everything we have now is really, its manufacturer has to come and put it back together again.
So what does your new machine do that the others, well, just what does it do?
Well, what does it do? It guides itself.
GPS.
It also talks to the machine that is on, that you put onto it. This is what we've been doing today. We've been a fertiliser spinner, and the fertiliser spinner then the tractor and through the GPS signal tells the fertiliser spinner when to start and when to stop in the field. In other words, the bit you have done and the bits that you haven't done. And it also, what we have done, we have mapped our farm for nutrients. So in other words, somebody has come out and tested all the soils and has told us the areas in the field that need the nutrients, and the fertiliser spinner goes across the field and starts and stops at the correct place.
Is that without a driver?
No.
You still
have to have a driver. Yeah. I know a lot of talk is talked about driverless machinery. We are still quite a long way off of that. I think the responsibility of having 15 tonnes of machinery driving across the field on its own without anyone, without any human input, would be a little bit dodgy at the moment.
So tell me, if you will, how much is that going to cost you? How much is it costing you?
The tractor, well, I can tell you exactly. The tractor is something close to £180,000, and the spinner is probably about 25 or 30. So you've got, you know, it's a £200,000 worth of machinery.
And the crops that you're growing, will they have changed in the last 10, 15 years?
There's a lot of talk at the moment that actually, as far as the botany of excuse me, has actually come up against the buffers a bit.
Want to stop for a sec?
Yeah, just stop for a week.
Okay. So
we think that the crop varieties and what have you, although they change and we change with them, because what you tend to get with crops is a breakdown in disease resistance after a while. But in fact, the yield we seem to be in a sort of a come up against the buffers. In the 70s and 80s, the yield difference from one crop to another, or one season to another, was quite startling. You know, it was at a gallop then, but we seem to be down to a little bit more of a, not even a jog, I'd say a steady walk at the moment forward as far as yield is concerned.
Any idea why that is?
I think they went so far in those early days.
Take it if you like.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I think they've come up against the stoppers a wee bit. I mean, as far as farming over here is concerned, what we haven't got is GM, genetically modified, because that is where the advances are at the moment. How that is going to change in the future, I don't know.
Sue was saying that government, Department of Environment, all the rest, environmental factors slightly affect what you're allowed to grow.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, well, obviously the GM, you know, we're not allowed to grow genetically modified crops. we're all in environmental schemes. In fact, everything we farm, the whole of the sort of 3,000 acres of arable ground we do is under the higher level environmental scheme. The geography of where we are, being in the South Downs, probably dictates that more than anything.
Because we're in a national park?
Because we're in the national park.
What difference has that specifically made?
Not very, very little to what it was before, but it looks as though in the future it's going to be easier to get onto these schemes, the environmental schemes. I don't think there's a thirst for it in the national park where there wouldn't be in other parts of the country.
Tell me a bit about this, about Upper Parsonage Farm. You built it in the late 20th century?
Yeah, Dad bought the farm in 1971. In fact, there's a photograph, Mum's got a photograph of Matt and I as youngsters pulling the thatch off of the barn out there, and where Johnny Powney, who used to live in the village, came up and put a sheet in it with tin. So for a very long time, the old barn actually was tinned. We had two hovels that came out from it, which is where we kept our beef cows, our single suckler beef herd. We did that for, 80, 90, 30 years. We had cattle in there. Obviously, the old barn itself became impractical as far as cattle was concerned. The hovels, where we call them hovels, but the lean-tos where the cattle wintered, started to deteriorate, and we'd actually built another shed up the way to put them in. So the whole site was sort of becoming derelict in a way.
And you're departing from cattle farming anyhow.
Well, that was to come a little bit later, but yeah, we were certainly downshifting on cattle.
So what was the thought in converting it?
Well, Sue and I. Just thought, well, are we missing an opportunity here to, just test the water in with the planners and see if we can get planning permission? Now, without going into vast amounts of detail and meetings and this, that and everything else, we got it. Don't ask me how. It's a mystery to this day. But I can remember standing out on the back there with the eight South East Hants district councillors explaining them to why a farmhouse in up here would be a jolly good idea, and they must have believed me. I have to say that everything that they gave us the permission for, because it had an awful lot of restrictions on it and still has, we abided, it was for us to be able to look after the cattle and sheep, which were in a very isolated part of the valley, and had and be far more local to them than what we were. But other than that, yeah.
Did you restore the barn because you wanted to, or because they said you had to, or both?
The barn had to be restored. Initially, it was to be restored as with the thatch. That was the one thing. We then went back to the planners and said, can we slate it? Because we weren't keen on thatch at the time. So we had permission to put slates on the barn. But then I just thought, I'll thatch it. I just thought I'd give it a go and do it myself, and I did a corner and got on with it and just carried on.
Never thatched before.
No.
Gosh. And at first it was cream teas.
At first it was cream teas.
Yep. And how did that go?
The cream teas were very good. They were very good. The problem is with cream teas was, Sue could quite easily have a couple of three girls organised. She'd done all her preparations for a nice sunny afternoon, and a shower comes along at about 11 o'clock in the morning, and that's when people make the decision for their day. So it could be quite sunny in the afternoon when Sue was doing the cream teas, but if we'd had a wind or a bit of rain and in the morning or something like that, or it looked, the weather gone a bit shucky, Sue would be stood there looking at three girls doing nothing all afternoon, and vice versa. She could quite easily say, well, the weather forecast doesn't look that good today. I'll just, have a couple of us up here and see what goes on. And they could be queued up halfway down to the village, trying to come in for a cup of tea. It was the variation of it that made it so difficult.
You've still got the B&B business.
We still do B&B, and we still, yeah.
With 3,000 acres to farm?
No, that's probably... Well, as far as the Sue enjoys doing it. She came out of catering, before we were married, and indeed she had a little business of catering for weddings when we were early in our early married life, and she enjoys doing it.
And does Matt do the hog roasts because he enjoys it, or because economically you've got...
Well, that started again in the 90s, when economically that's what he had to do. The word was diversification. It's not a word I particularly enjoy, I have to say, because I think, you can lose lose concentration on the job in hand, and you know, everything becomes diversification. Well, you know, the catering industry isn't easy. Having weddings in the barn was, you know, okay, you could earn some money out of it, but it wasn't easy money at 2 o'clock in the morning trying to get people taxis back to Petersfield. In fact, it was particularly difficult. So, you know, nothing comes easy. Matt Hogrove's business, I mean, yeah, he does, again, he does that very well, and he enjoys doing it, if you ask him.
So, how, just describe the changes in the, what I'm calling the parish of East Mean. It actually is the valley, including Langrish, Stroud, Ramsdean, Oxenbourne, and right up to West Mean. What has changed in farming overall that you've seen?
The biggest, yes, they've changed. We're probably farming more akin to what my ancestors came down to in Hampshire, which was arable and sheep, than we've come out of, because it's they in the Cumbrians brought the cattle down with them, because Hampshire was sick at the turn of the 19th century, and these big estates had basically run it ragged. So they brought the Cumbrian, they asked the Cumbrian migration to come down, and you've probably heard of the Cumbrian migration many times before, to come down and bring their cattle with them to put some fertility back in the soil. And with two world wars in the intervening years, you know, milk production and what have you became a very big part of agriculture. Ironically now, it has changed beyond all recognition. But with us going into arable, it doesn't mean to say there isn't a place for livestock. But interestingly, one of the other changes, and the one that upsets me more than anything, is when I started work in 1977, came and lived on the farm. His name is John Street. Yes, he had come from, I think he'd come up from the West Country, but yeah. The relief cowman was George Dalen, Dalen being an East Mean family. The tractor driver was Nobby Whittier. One of the tractor drivers, the main tractor driver, was Nobby Whittier. Another name synonymous, deeply synonymous with East Mean and the farming community. Another tractor driver was Tommy Newell. Now, Tommy Newell was related to the Vaughan family and what have you. They were synonymous with the village. They were village people. And now, well, we have Ryan. Ryan has a tenuous link to the village and what have you, but other than that, there's nobody.
But the size of farms has changed too, hasn't it?
The size of farms has got a lot bigger. Yeah, the economics of it, and you know, and the technology involved, but it is more. It is mostly the economics of it. Yeah. I mean, I could think of nothing better than having a couple of half a dozen chaps to, or you know, men or women to give us a hand on the farm, but it's just, you know, it's just not economically there to do.
Somebody, I've counted up to about 10 farms in the valley now. And there must have been about 30 at the beginning of the last century.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a very in today's world, it's not a very sexy job, is it? That's the other thing. You know, it's not something people want to do. An awful lot of people, when a camera and a microphone is put in front of them, will turn around and say that they want to be a farmer, and you know, it's the outdoor life and this, that, and everything else. Unfortunately, that doesn't manifest itself in reality, because they don't want the cold and wet, and they don't want to be working on Boxing Day or when everyone else is, or Christmas Day when everyone else is having fun, and that's the reality, I'm afraid.
And you're what, fourth generation Atkinsons in the valley?
Yeah.
And your next generation?
Well, next generation, yes. Well, Jack at the moment is in Australia. How Australia's managed to cut its corn without Jack's help in the past seems to be a mystery at the moment. But he has been doing that, and he's coming back onto the farm.
Well, that's coming back in.
He is.
Yeah.
And there is a group of kids out there who are very keen on it, and, you know, who like the machinery, and they're very techy and what have you. And, you know, good luck to them, because they are the future of the job.
Yes, that's the answer to it, isn't it? See if there's anything else that I've forgotten. No, I think that's it. Well, bless you. You are very good, if I may say so.